You're listening to Mystic Falls Memories of the Vampire Diaries Rewatch Podcast. I'm Maddie, and my co-host Jen joins me as we take a deep dive into the ships we adore and all of the crazy drama surrounding Mystic Falls.
Is that my Maddie?
It is.
Yay, we're podcasting!
It's been a while.
It's been a really long time. Which is like, I feel strong.
Watchover came out and I was like, oh yeah, we should do that.
Right? Okay, because like, those of you who listen to Watchover, you know that anytime I'm not podcasting on Watchover, it's like 99% of the time my fault. So the same applies to our Vampire Diaries podcast because Mystic Fall Memories, because I go into dark work holes. It's either work or I'm sick. So at least this time around, it was work.
It was just work. And then we had the holidays.
Yep.
And then we had our individual ability to not be able to watch anything but Bridgerton.
Girl, it's so bad right now. Like, I need to get checked into a Bridgerton program because the addiction is real. My husband's like,
I started another rewatch last night at 1 a.m.
Okay, so I've got it down to a science now. I can watch all my favorite scenes in about 2 hours. So, like, I just keep repeating it over and over. It's a problem. I'm embarrassed.
I'm a little, but also kind of not.
But also not really. Because did you hear? I just saw on Twitter, Reggie Jean, I think his name. Anyways.
Yes.
The Duke. He's in the running to be James Bond.
And I'm here for it.
I will actually watch a Bond movie if that man is Bond. Like,
for sure.
Absolutely. 100%. If they do not cast him, I don't know. What are we going to do?
Because the thing is, like, to make up for all the, like, misogyny of how he just, like, has, like, Bond girls and casts them aside and stuff.
And it's how it's, like,
makes it still palatable.
Right. And also,
is him being hot.
For instance, forever, so... Like, didn't they cast a girl? I thought they cast an African-American woman.
So, she's a 007, but not James Bond.
Honestly.
Because in the next one, it's, like, basically in the one that was supposed to come out this year, but, you know, COVID, it was, like, James Bond is retired now, and there's a new 007, but he gets roped back in, so he has to work with her, and...
Lame.
She doesn't like him because he's old.
And so, fair. So far, I'm liking the sounds of her.
Because I like the line in the trailer where she's like, if you get in my way, I'll shoot you in the knee, the one that works.
I might actually have to watch that one. Okay, so we're podcasting.
Eventually.
On. What are we doing? I wrote notes down.
Oh, yay. So this is episode 7 and 8 of season 1, so Haunted and 162 Candles.
I was thinking about it, that Vampire Diaries season 1 is very much like Arrow season 1 in that it's required viewing, but it's not the strongest season, so you just have to power through it. And once you power through the first season, it's like, okay, then you're on the downhill.
And you get a couple episodes here and there that it's like, oh, just when you're about to be, like, done, you're like, oh, yeah, that's why I wanted to watch
exactly.
This.
Exactly. Like, Kevin Williamson and Julie Plec are experts at just, like, dangling enough of the carrot that you put up with the never-ending boring stick that you're getting in season 1. So I would say these couple runs of episodes are more carrot than stick because shit finally starts happening. Which is good, because Lord, was I bored.
Truly.
It was bad. Okay, so Vicky's a vampire now, right?
Yeah, she is.
Okay, and she's a disaster zone. Vicky's a disaster zone of a person prior to being a...
Because this is where they emphasize, like, being a vampire, like, amplifies all of your, like, personality traits and stuff. So her being, like, a mess and a druggie and...
Like,
makes super, bad decisions.
Right. She's high strung. She's really super emotional. She makes horrific life decisions for herself. So Steph is like explaining this all to Elena. And she's like, so she like has issues. And Steph is like, Yep.
So she's a vampire with issues? Right. Yes.
Stefan's like, yeah, this is...
Honestly, that could be the name of the show, right. Vampires with Issues.
I like how Stefan, like, tries to present this as, it's gonna be okay. I got it under control. It's gonna be fine. Everything's fine. We're gonna be good. And it's, like, clearly fine the entire time. Like, it's just like, oh my god, this is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster.
And I think Elena, like, every time she's just like, this... it's going to end horribly.
Yeah, she's like, sure, Jan. Like, I understand you're trying to convince me everything's fine, but all you're convincing me is that everything is not fine.
Like, and my brother is in grave danger.
Right, because he's like, anytime she's like, oh, Vicky got out. Like, someone's like, shit. Elena's like, I thought everything was fine. She's like, no, it's fine if we have her locked in a cage and doused with vervain. But if she's actually allowed to function in any normal way, it's horrible. Although she tries to eat Tyler, which I gotta say, as decisions go...
Okay, can I say, I love the line when Damon shows up and starts, like, choking him, and Stefan's like, Damon, no, and Damon rolls his eyes and says, oh, who's gonna miss this idiot? And I was like, exactly.
Facts only.
Like, do you know how much we could avoid if he had just killed him there?
I mean, it takes solid. I mean, Tyler's a journey in this show. It takes a solid amount of episodes for me to start liking him again. But it ain't in season one when that's happening. So,
because he gets slightly redeemed in season two. But then the problem is, by season four, you're once again like, you're in the way. Like,
yeah, but like, I would say the strongest Tyler is like season three Tyler.
True.
And then he kind of goes to hell in a handbasket after that. But that's neither here nor there. They honestly could have killed that guy off at any point in time, and I probably would have been okay with it.
Like, it's true.
Okay. So then Stefan tries to sell the bunny diet, which brings an interesting morality debate to this whole situation, because Damon, his argument is like, okay, Damon kills people because he enjoys that and it's fun and whatever. But he tells Vicky, you don't have to kill people. You can just snatch, eat, and erase. And Stefan's like, no. Nobody wants to have their minds messed with. And Damon's like, whatever, just do whatever the hell you want. You're a vampire. So it kind of like brings an interesting morality to it, because what kind of vampire would you want to be? And Stefan's gone extreme to the vegetarian exactly. Version of vampirism, which is animals, because he has absolutely no control. But Stefan kind of...
I'd almost bring it. It's almost more like the veganism of vampirism, right, because it's just so obnoxious.
Yep. It's almost like Stefan makes his addiction problem everyone else's problem, though. Like, not all vampires are like Stefan, but he kind of like acts like there's that potential, and I think that has a lot to do with Stefan.
However, with Vicky, there's highly potential.
So. Right, and he's right about... I'm not saying he's out. Yeah, exactly. He's 100% correct about Vicky, because I think he recognizes, he's like, she has addiction problems in her regular life, so clearly...
As a 17-year-old, so
like... As a 17-year-old, Stefan's like, I recognize that. I see that. So, because Stefan doesn't really figure out he has addiction problems until after he's a vampire, but Damon's kind of an interesting, like, okay, if they don't remember it, are you really hurting them? Yes, you are. But Damon's morality is fascinating to me in this show.
Truly.
Mm-hmm. You're like, interesting. Okay, how much did you love Vicky versus Elena when Vicky pins Elena up against the wall?
It's kind of a great moment.
Yeah.
Because, like, I get it. Because you imagine of just, like, it's been perfect Elena for, like, literally their entire lives.
I mean, you gotta, yeah, if you're Vicky and you're, like, the town floozy or whatever, and your brother, who's literally the only person you give a crap about, is dating perfect Elena, and then she dumps his ass, you're not gonna like Elena. And Elena can be I like Elena. Like, my
self-righteous
husband,
and self-absorbed.
Right. I like Elena, but she can be a lot to take. Like, I like her in, like, the earlier seasons. Later on, I'm done with her. But, yeah, she, even in the early seasons, she's self-righteous and kind of a pain in the ass. Like, she has zero problem, it feels like, right now with her hanging out with Stefan and Damon. Like, she's not limiting her access to Stefan and Damon, but she's like, no, Vicky can't be anywhere around Jeremy. And I don't think she's saying that because, oh, Vicky's a new vampire and out of control. She's not saying once you get control, you can be around Jeremy. She's saying you can't ever be around Jeremy ever again, which is an interesting stance to take when Elena is actively engaging and potentially dating two vampires right now. Like, okay, I don't really, like, I guess she's overprotective sister, and I think she's right that no, now clearly is not the time for Vicky to be around Jeremy. But
and once again, like, the immediate response of, like, I'm not cluing my brother into this.
The lying?
It's a lot safer for him to know.
Right! Like, why don't you just tell him? The lying is ridiculous. Like, the amount Elena lies to Jeremy is...
Because it's a long time before he, like, discovers the truth.
It's a really long time, and then at the end of the episode... after Stefan kills Vicky, which Calciprese, when you first watched the episode, were you expecting Vicky to die? Because I kind of I kind of vaguely remember this being like one of the first shocking moments of the Vampire Diaries, because everyone was like, oh.
Well, I was more shocked when, like, her neck got snapped the episode prior, but then when it was like, I had a feeling once they were kind of like, by the time that they were at the Halloween party, I'm like, oh, this is going to end terribly and she's probably going
to
die.
Well, what's so interesting to me about it, like, I always think of it from the actor standpoint. Like, you're on a vampire show, you get killed, but then you become a vampire. You would feel like you have some job security after that, because they just turned you into an immortal. So you're not expecting to lose your job the very next episode. Like, I wonder what that conversation was with the actress.
I know, that's probably something for Joseph Morgan that he probably felt great about, because he's like, my character literally can't be killed.
Right, exactly. You're like, okay, I'm going to be around for a little bit. And they did the same thing on the originals with a couple actresses, and I was like, you know, that's just kind of got to be a shitty conversation. Like, okay, you're given a vampire storyline, particularly if you're kind of a boring human character, then you're turned into a vampire, like, shit's just getting good for your character, and then they kill you. That kind of sucks.
Because, like, that's totally what they were planning with Caroline. But Candace Acquila is just too great.
Right. Right. But yes. Okay.
Not going to lie, not to get too, like, too negative talk, but, like, Kayla Yule isn't exactly the best of actresses.
I was never a huge fan of Vicky. Like, Vicky, just the way she acts. Because
her scenes where she's just like, I want blood.
Right. You're just like,
okay. I just keep thinking about blood.
Like, like, as you're watching the episode, you're like, Vicky is going to be the most obnoxious vampire in the history of vampires, so I'm okay. By the time you get to the end,
did you watch True Blood? Her.
Yeah.
Because comparatively, like, when Jessica becomes a vampire and it's like bratty teenager vampire, like, Deborah Ann Woll played that, like, really engagingly, but that this is kind of a similar scenario where she's trying to come off like bratty and stuff, but still, like, dangerous, and it came off more obnoxious than, like, funny.
It's just obnoxious. Wait, who's Jessica?
The redhead.
Jessica, the redhead. I'm, like, blanking. I have no idea. It's gone. No memory.
She played, well, the actress who played Karen Page in the Netflix, like, Daredevil stuff, that she was on True Blood, but had red hair.
Oh, I didn't watch True Blood.
Oh,
I got you though. I'm with you. I don't. There is a vampire story out there that I have not watched. I did not watch True Blood. How did you get to watch True Blood with the dictatorship you lived under? In terms of television, was that another one you were sneaking? Did you sneak HBO?
That was complete sneaking,
girl. Wow. That show was racy. Holy crap! Like, if I was your mother, I would have just blown right past Vampire Diaries. Who cares? And we would have just focused on getting you in trouble over True Blood. Maddie, you're such a little rebel.
They still don't know that one. Yeah.
Thank God they don't listen to this.
No.
I'm like, wait a minute. How old were you when True Blood came out? Like, you had to be.
I was, like, 15.
Yeah, I was going to be, like, 14 or 15. Holy shit, girl. Well, you know, got to get sex education from somewhere. All right. So we have a nice little moment that I always kind of enjoyed is this Damon versus Elena. You see it in a lot of fan vids when she slaps him.
Yes.
So she's just like, people die around you and it matters. And I got to be honest, this is not Elena.
This episode was a big like fan vids clip because it's her slapping him. And then also when she like breaks down crying in the car, that's right, always
like,
used.
You see this episode in every fan vid. And like, I got to be honest, it's not Natalie or Nina Dobrev's strongest acting moment in either case. Like, she gets better as the series progresses, but like, this was not the whole from start to finish with her acting. I was like, this isn't a great episode for her. Maybe she was tired. I don't know what the deal is. But I always kind of felt like the scene where she's, you know, accosting Damon of the lack of morality just felt a little forced. And I think Ian Somerhalder does a good job turning it around. You know what I mean? Like, but like, and he gives like this appearance.
Like, just Damon's like, you're bleeding, get out.
Yeah. He's just like, child, leave me alone. So that was good. But I have to say the end of the episode is my favorite part. The Vampire Diaries has like really great music and they did For the Weight of Us for this scene. And it's such a perfect song because Elena's like telling Stefan, I really don't want my life to be like this with people dying and there being vampires. And you brought all of this into my life and it's just horrible. But she says to him, but despite all that, I don't want to forget because I can't lose the way I feel about you. Which, from a Stelena fan, is a fairly epic moment because that's really like the first time Elena tells Stefan. She doesn't really say I love you, but she definitely throws him a bigger bone.
I have feelings.
Right, that I have. Like, because she has been very much stay away from me.
That's the thing of watching these two episodes back to back is that it starts with like her following him around and then saying like, I don't want to take away the how I feel about you. And then like the very next episode is just like, I can't, after they're like lying to the police and stuff, she's like, I can't do this, blah, blah, blah.
Right, like, stay away from me. You're like, pick a theme, Elena. Are we in or are we out? Which is very common.
And then just as Lexi's about to talk her back in, but then Stefan's like, you were right. You do need to stay away from me.
I can't do it. I'm like, oh my God. Stefan and Elena and their dramatic I can'ts are just, it's nonsense. Like, children, you're in love with each other. Just get over it and be together. So, but I love that at the very end that Damon compels Jeremy. Like, I hate that Elena has Damon compel Jeremy because it's a complete, like, Stefan has been very clear with her. Like, I'm going to tell you the truth. So everything is your decision. And so you have your free will intact. And the second Jeremy runs into some situations, Elena removes, takes away his free will. And what drives me nuts is Stefan's like, oh, if this is what you want, okay. Like, but nobody cares what Jeremy wants? We're not going to do that? Okay, sounds good. It's like, there's this
thing like,
to show up a little
also,
wants
like,
it, it's good. And that's not true.
Exactly. And Jeremy is only, like, isn't he only, like, a year or 2 years tops younger than her, right?
Yeah, it's not like he's, I want to say, like, he's a year younger. Like,
yeah, so he's like
max.
He's like 15, 16, basically.
Yeah, so what is she? She's 16? Or she's 17.
She's 17.
Yeah, I would say clearly he's not, I would say he's a year younger. I would say 16.
Yeah.
Which is.
So basically just as equipped as you are to deal with all of this.
Right? Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. So I hate this.
Because it's like,
road.
If somehow it was like a sixth grader or younger that somehow got caught in this, I understand the like compel the child to not know about like scary monsters,
yeah,
then that makes sense. But like, he's a 16-year-old young man, like,
yeah, if it's cool for Bonnie to be around, if it's cool for Caroline to be around, if it's cool for Elena to be around, then it's fine for Jeremy. It's just silly. And I hate that she goes, what I hate most about it is that, like, I think it would have been more interesting if the writers had Elena agreeing with, like, Damon agrees with Elena. He offers to compel. But you have Stefan remain staunchly opposed to it, where he's like, no, Elena, this isn't right. Like, it's okay for Stefan to disagree with Elena. You know what I mean? For him to say,
exactly,
No, you cannot take away his free will. And for Elena to be like, okay, well, I disagree. And then Damon shows up and Damon sides with Elena. I think that would have been a way more interesting way to play the scene and, like, maintain some
have him actually have convictions instead
of... Yeah, and, like, maintain some care. But they do this thing in the show that if Elena wants it or Elena says it, it's like Damon and Elena or Damon and Stefan are like, oh, okay, then it's fine. You're like, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So that's the only part of it.
Because it's like, if it's for Elena, it's totally fine.
It's totally that, cool.
Because like, I always go back to in season four when they kill Cole, knowing that it also kills every single vampire that he's ever created.
We're going to have a rant about that when that happens because it's just not okay. Okay. Next episode is one of my favorites, though.
It's great.
Lexi's here. Yay!
And I love that they tried to introduce her as all scary and it's just immediately like, just like, no.
She's actually like, it's like a bottle of bubbles showing up and you're like, oh my god, Stefan has a friend. Like, it's so exciting to find out that Stefan has, and he does, he has one friend.
A friend and a friend that's cool.
And she's cool and she's awesome and she loves Bon Jovi. And she gets him out of his, you know, morose, brooding, I hate myself. And you actually get to see Stefan this episode because it's his birthday. You actually get to see Stefan actually have some fun and laugh and dance. And he plays pool. It's very unnerving.
It's like, oh, I see why, like, someone would want to date them, even knowing that it could, like, endanger their lives. I get it now.
Right. Well, and, like, I love the way they did all – I mean, every introduction is so spot-on perfect because at first you're like, okay, Lexi is Stefan's best friend. You get that very soon. But then you're like, oh, I wonder what her relationship is with Damon. And he kind of does his sexy flirting kind of thing. And she grabs him by the throat. And she's like, don't
I'm
forget.
Older and yeah, stronger. I'm older, don't mess with me.
Stronger and I will kill you. And he's like, oh, and that's like the first time we really see Damon like someone who's more powerful than
out of his league. Yeah,
like we haven't ever, because Stefan is on the bunny diet, so he physically can't take Damon. That's why Damon's still around and, you know, causing all this trouble. And so it's really kind of enjoyable where you're like, oh, finally we have someone who can like take this guy. And I just love that she hates him. I love it.
Like, I do.
So Team Stefan, I'm just like, yes, because that's
I like that she just flat out says, you're not a nice person.
Right. She's like, because I'm a vampire. She's like, well, that's not an excuse. You can still be a decent person to be a vampire. I love her. And then she shows up downstairs because Stefan is talking about Elena. And so she walks downstairs and she's in a towel. So Elena thinks Stefan's hooking up with this pretty blonde thing, but that's the first
like they just broke up.
Right, because they just broke up and Stefan's already sleeping around. But that's the moment where Lexi finds out that Elena looks just like Catherine, which is
I like that she marches up and it's just like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, she's
like
you
dude.
Have, yeah, she's like, you have serious emotional damage. I love that line because it's true. But it's really super important that like that Stefan have somebody that he trusts to talk about this particular issue. Because up until now, audience members don't really know what Stefan's deal is with that. It's super sketchy. You know what I mean? That he knows Elena looks just like his ex-girlfriend and he's pursued her. So it's like, okay, dude, what is happening here? And he very clearly explains to the audience what's going on with his side of it. Like, it's wrong that he's not telling Elena the truth, which will bite him in the ass reasonably quickly.
Yes.
But he's like, no, okay, obviously.
In literally about two episodes.
He's like, obviously, yes, that's what drew me in, but she's totally different from Catherine. And he talks about all the things he loves about Elena. And that's when...
And Lexi's like, oh, so she's not a raging bitch?
Right. And Lexi's like, oh, you're in love with her. And as the series goes on, and you... Because Lexi's the person who really gets Stefan out of his ripper. And she's like his sober coach. So there's a great line later on where she talks about love. And that's the thing a vampire has to live for. So when Lexi finds out that Stefan finally, after all of these years, has truly fallen in love with someone, she's pretty jazzed. She's pretty jazzed. So it's super cute, and I love it. It's, like, one of my favorite scenes ever.
She's like, I ship it.
Yeah, she's like, I'm on board. And then they go... So Stefan goes to the house because he finds out, because he knows that Elena...
Oh, so we also have Bonnie stuff.
Oh, that's so... right. Bonnie. Okay, you talk about the Bonnie stuff because I'm like, I'm so focused on my Stelena stuff. It's literally all
talking. So Grams is kind of giving some backstory. Grams is great. I forgot how wonderful
Don't
she is.
Don't you miss Grams? Like, these children Jasmine need guy, a responsible like... adult who knows what the frack is going on.
Speaking of not telling, is like, so... You tell Bonnie she's a witch and, like, that all of this is real.
Right.
And that she's not, like, this isn't just grandma being crazy. Right. Wouldn't you also tell part of the piece of the supernatural puzzle of, like, your place in this is there's also vampires and they will take advantage of you and, like, they do bad things.
I am with you, girl. I feel that's an important detail that Grams kind of glazes over. Particularly yes. since there's two vampires in town, and one of them is hell-bent on getting the necklace. So don't you think you would tell Bonnie that, yes, Damon wants the necklace because, FYI, Damon's a vampire? I don't know. Feels
or
like
even
a key
just
plot
the,
point.
Even if she doesn't know it's specifically the Salvators, who just, hey, this now that you are included on the supernatural, this is a thing you should
yes.
look out for and be aware of.
Yes! Like, it just feels like a natural... Like, hey, there's a such thing as
it's
vampires.
The supernatural version of, like, the Stranger Danger talk.
Right. It's like, okay, there's vampires. There's also werewolves. Like, it just feels like you should just, like, rip the Band-Aid open. It's like the sex education talk. You just, you know, you're like, at a certain point, you just gotta give them the whole buffet.
It's all true.
Which is something I literally said to my daughter. I was like, mommy is just going to rip the Band-Aid off. We're just gonna do it. And I'm just going to tell you everything. And she's like, okay, go. Just got to get through this. Yeah. So there's a necklace that Bonnie, it's the necklace that Caroline stole for Damon, but then Caroline got it back from Damon. And then Caroline gave it to Bonnie and now Bonnie has it, but Damon wants it back. Right?
Exactly.
Okay. Welcome to Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, because it's like originally from like the Bennett line, essentially.
Yeah, my understanding of and they get a little bit more into the necklace next weekend is that it has very important connection to or next episode, not next weekend. My God, next episode because it's like it's a crystal that's very important in terms of like where Catherine is. So, but first we have to talk about Lexi and Elena's. Little chat at the bar because it's
also one more thing of just Damon sucks and it's terrible, so he needs like a big distraction and whatnot, so he brings Caroline back into the and like she walks up and it's like, you suck, I don't want to talk to you, and then immediately like it's crazy they don't really do this in future seasons, but where he like turns on the compelling without even saying anything that compel and is just like you hear the like compelling music though, and then she's like, oh my god, so great to see you, and
yeah,
like,
it's really
a little smirk and you're like, ugh.
It's really
it's basically like she's back under his like control,
and I really feel like in season one, I mean, Damon's awful in season one. He kills people. He uses people. He's abusive to Caroline. And I really feel like the writers are like, it's okay because he looks like Ian Somerhalder. That's pretty much the reason that Damon's allowed to do all these terrible things because he looks like he's got Ian Somerhalder's face and Ian's hot. It's really, that's an excuse for everything for me. I was like engaging with fans and like behavior of season one, well, he's hot, so it doesn't matter. It's like, no, people, be better.
So there's an amazing podcast called
and still think he's hot.
True. There's an amazing podcast called The Bechdel Cast that talks about like women in media and different things. And one of the elements of it is they have a thing that they call the Buscemi test. And it's like, if these actions, someone who looks like Steve Buscemi, would you still think?
God. I love it. Would you still think he's dateable? I love that. I am going to use that forevermore. seriously, that is fantastic.
Like, do you think it's okay? No.
No.
Okay. Then it's actually wrong, okay, even if a hot person does it.
God, I love that so much. And you know what? I'm not saying, like, that only applies to Damon. Pretty much everyone on this show is shitty.
Everyone in this show.
And it's like they get
everyone is hot and terrible.
Yeah, it's really like everyone's awful. I'm harping on Damon right now because this is a very Damon did something horrible focused couple episodes. So what's interesting is Damon is, he is trying to infiltrate and he's trying to find out what does the town know about vampires. So he's kind of getting hip to the Founders Council. He knows that Zach has vervain. He's trying to figure out what the cops know and what, and he sits down and it's a really interesting scene because it plays into later on, very importantly, where, you know, Liz, the sheriff, Caroline's mom, is like, hey, at some point we're going to have to start. She's like, I have not been able to flush these vampires out. So she says to him, at some point we start
maybe we have to look. Maybe they can come out during the day.
Are walking around in the day. And for Damon, that's like, oh, fuck. Because if they figure out that vampires can walk around in the day, that's been stepping on Damon's cover for centuries, that they are daylight vampires. So he has to give Liz a vampire. Like, a vampire has to show up, a vampire has to attack someone, and Liz has to think that she got the vampire. Which, of course, who's the newest vampire in town? Lexi. But before we get to that, Lexi has a nice moment with Elena, and Elena's like, hey, Stefan is, like, really awesome around you, and he's really not, you know, he's more uptight around me, and Lexi gives the big speech, like, you know what? Love conquered all in the end for me, and that's what's going to happen for you.
When it's real, you can't walk away.
Walk away. And then Stefan, no, he was eavesdropping with his vampire hearing, and Lexi's like, what? I was feeling epic, which is like
it's so cute.
It's such a good line, and literally it's like, it's an iconic line for Stefan and Lexi for the rest of the series, and it plays very heavily into the series finale, which I won't spoil, but it's so good. Okay. So Damon kills Lexi, and it's really upsetting because you're like, this character is amazing, and they killed her in one episode.
I know. You're like, we barely knew ye.
I know. It's like you're finally like, oh, this is going to be like a really awesome pairing that, you know.
This is the first of two episodes in season one where they introduce someone awesome and then kill them by the end of the episode.
You're like, okay, seriously, enough with the killing. Like, can we?
And I was like, it's Ariel Klebold, though.
No, she's amazing. I got to give the writers credit because they do manage to bring Lexi back in a variety of ways over the years.
They get creative.
Yeah. And a lot of Stefan and Caroline's friendship going forward is based off of that desire for people to have seen more of Lexi and Stefan being friends. So we kind of get it fulfilled for many years via Caroline and Stefan. So, because Caroline is very much like Lexi in a lot of ways. So, but it's interesting, like, with all of this, Stefan and Damon, oh, we're going to kill each other. So Damon kills Stefan's best friend, and then he, like, stabs him with some wood, but he's not in the heart. And Stefan's like, I spared you because, like, I don't remember. At some point, Damon saved his life.
Because you saved my life by essentially doing this cover. So fine.
Okay. Oh, that's it. I was like, what did he do for you? I was like, okay. It's a super lame, like, clearly Stefan and Damon, like, if you have not keyed into this, clearly Stefan and Damon have no intention of ever killing each other. Like, they
exactly
the toxicity between them.
Because I was watching it when, like, Stefan charges in, I was like, you know, if you just did the Elijah Hart rip instead of, like, actually fighting, then this would all be over.
It'd be so much easier. Can I tell you a situation that's happening with me on another show right now? So I'm watching, what is it, River, Twin River, Mystic River?
Virgin River.
Virgin River, okay. And Elijah is in the show. He's the husband.
Yes, I told you he was in it. That's what convinced you.
Okay, so I'm watching it, and it's really creating a problem.
I think literally last episode that we recorded, I told you that Elijah was in it.
Okay, so I did. Okay, and then the problem is, though, like, it's interfering with my ability to ship this chick with the bar guy.
Exactly, because, like, it's like, you were married to Elijah.
Because she's married to Elijah. So I'm just like, this is like, is this guy supposed to be Elijah? Elijah replacement because he don't fit. Like, that's not okay. He's not even coming close.
It's not enough.
It's really not enough. And I don't know what it is about this actor, because he was on Grey's Anatomy and he came in as like McDreamy replacement. I'm like, fuck that shit. So I have a thing with this actor as replacements for the hotter love story that preceded him. It's a problem. So yeah, I'm not really on board with Jack yet, which I think I'm like episode 8. I really need to start getting on board with Jack, because we're like 8 episodes in and he's the guy.
I think you're the only other one in the same boat as me that I'm like, I just can't get fully invested, because I understand that the husband is dead. It was Elijah.
I know! You're like, I would quit life too if I was married to Elijah and he died. Like, what the hell? Also, did they have to give this woman the saddest backstory in the history of the world? Sweet Jesus. Like, what the? It's like a bad Lifetime
movie. It's tragic.
It's so tragic. I'm like, yeah, I would move out to the woods in the middle of nowhere, too. Okay, anyway, so that was my Virgin River. I'm so glad that you feel the same, though. I felt like something's wrong with me, because I'm just like, I just want Elijah back. Can't we just bring him back to life? I don't understand.
Because, like, we can't bring vampire into this. Like, he got turned somehow. There we go.
Like, but just kidding. I'm not really dead. Ta-da. Like, dead husbands come back all the time on melodramas. Like, that happens all the time. They did it on Grace. The sister who was supposed to be dead in Iraq, she was alive the whole time.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. All right. So now Lexi's dead and it's really sad. So the final episode.
So also, Damon continues to be the worst, because, like, then he's, like, verbally abusive to Caroline, and it's terrible. And once again, I hate him. And this is really development on Maddie's rewatch.
Like, in terms of Caroline running the whole gamut of abuse, we have emotional abuse, we have physical abuse, we have sexual abuse. He's checking off every fucking box in this department. It's like, and this.
So basically, he directs to, like, literally all of her insecurities and tells her that she's a shallow, useless waste of space. So then she's like, I'm going to go get drunk. And then Maddie Blue Eyes,
Maddie freaking Blue Eyes, the angel from God that he is. Like, how do you not
because
love Maddie
also
Blue Eyes?
Being shallow, insecure, and, like, crazy drunk, that could have gone a very different direction if she hadn't gone to Matt. So you're just like, thank you, Matt, for being the only decent human man in Mystic Falls.
Like, he picks her up, like, she can't walk, so she's so drunk. He picks her up.
Because, like, if she approached season one Tyler, this would have been a different
story. This would have been bad. Yeah, you're like, oh, great, we get to watch another rape scene. Fantastic. Yeah, but he picks her up. He makes sure she gets home safe. I mean, they have a really nice, and doesn't he sleep over, right? He stays with her.
Because she basically is saying, like, just that she feels like literally no one loves her and that Wish's life was different. And Matt totally understands because his life is also terrible. And
yeah.
So
they're very bonded.
And she says, stay.
Yeah. They're very bonded in their loneliness. Like, if you're wondering what the thread is between a Caroline.
So they just cuddle and it's and it's just sweet.
And listen.
Because it's. They're the ones left behind.
Right. Ships have been born from less on this show. And I gotta say, this is like one of the situations where Candace Akala has chemistry with everyone. I really have not run into a relationship on this show that Caroline has had that I have not enjoyed. Like, every gamut. Because they spin Caroline around like a carousel. And I would have been fine with all of their relationships. I think I would have been fine if she had been endgame with any of the guys she dated on this show. I'm really trying to think. No, I was cool with all of them. I have varying levels of investment. Like, there's certain ones I like better. But I
kind of get over Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler later
and
on.
And I would have been okay if they went there with Enzo. Because, once again, Caroline has chemistry with everyone.
I gotta say, I love Matt and Caroline. I love, love, love. Because, you know, Caroline, and this is kind of plays into later, Caroline kind of gets Elena's cast-offs.
Yes.
But what I love about Caroline is she sees these good men for who they are. Not that they're boring. Their goodness isn't boring. It's the best part about them. You know what I mean? And she really appreciates these guys for the good guys that they are. So you're kind of, because, like, yeah, you do kind of feel bad. Like, Matt's basically perfect. Just Elena doesn't have that sexual chemistry with him, you know, and she loves him like a friend, which, you know what, that happens. God knows that happened to me. I had a guy that I was dating in high school where it was like, this was the guy I should be with, and everybody wanted me to be with him, and everybody wanted us to get married, and it was just, it wasn't there for me, you know? It just didn't work, and that happens. But you want the guy to end up with somebody who does love him, who does appreciate him, you know what I mean? And who does see that he's a great guy who deserves to be happy. So I love that they put Matt with Caroline. I think it's a fantastic pairing. It's perfect.
It's like exactly what they needed at this point in time in their lives. And then like it's kind of a healing relationship for both of them. So then the other relationships that they have in the future, like, they are equipped to handle those because they have like a solid loving relationship.
Right. That doesn't that really end
the
with
buffer
a lot
in between.
Of, right. It doesn't end with a lot of trauma. You know what I mean? Like, cause Caroline.
No, because like Caroline couldn't go from like Damon to Klaus. Like she needed.
Right. Like there
she
was
needed
yes.
someone who was just nice and loved her.
Right. And just appreciated Caroline for who she is. And I also want to say like for Matt coming off of Elena, he really needed somebody who sees him as the greatest thing in the world, like who exactly. sees Matt as the prize. You know what I mean? Because Elena doesn't look at him like that. And I think Matt really feels that, like she likes the hot new guy in town and he's old news. But Caroline's known Matt for the exact same amount of time and she still thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I love the healing.
Because he's Maddie Blue Eyes. It's wonderful.
He's Maddie freaking Blue Eyes. Like, there are times where, as much as I love Stefan, I'm like, you know, Elena, would it have been so bad to marry Maddie Blue Eyes and pop out a couple babies? I mean, I don't know, girl. Lots of problems. Okay, but then we have to get to the last, so 109, because a new character shows up and I'm so excited. It's Alara.
Wait, I didn't watch 109. We were just doing those two episodes.
107 through 109. Okay, well, we'll save it. I already did the homework ahead of time, so now I don't have to. So we'll wait. Okay, so we're just doing 107 and 108.
So we should wait.
You know what we get to talk about now? Bridgerton. Do tell.
Yes, we do. Okay.
Segway!
We stayed very on topic for the Vampire Diaries,
we
and
were
I'm very
so
proud.
Good. I'm so proud of us. Okay, anyways, forget Vampire Diaries. If you haven't watched Bridgerton, stop listening to us right now. We're going to spoil the shit out of it.
We're going to spoil everything. Yes.
Literally everything. Okay, Maddie.
So
has
you
there
kind
been
of
a hotter Duke than the Duke?
It's a lot. Like,
it's just a lot. Like, in
honestly,
your brain,
of every period piece that I've ever watched, like, right. He reigns supreme. So, Matthew McFadden as Darcy. Mm,
God.
Will freaking Turner, like,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, please.
The Duke is superior.
You know what I feel
yes.
like the Duke is? I feel like Duke is Darcy meets, I want to say Damon Salvatore just because he's so slutty. Oh, no. It's the Duke is Darcy meets Oliver Queen.
Yes.
So, like, you have all the emotional damage of Oliver Queen and the sluttiness, but then you just have, like, the social awkwardness and emotional, you know, he's very emotionally reserved because feelings are hard, which is also Oliver Queen. But then he's, like, sex on a stick for, like, the Regency period, which is Darcy. Like, Darcy, I feel, is everybody's top-tier hotness when it comes to period pieces.
He's the blueprint. Like,
he's the blueprint. Like, Darcy from Jane Austen is the blueprint. But what's so interesting about this show is, like, you turn it on and you're expecting it to be, like, a Jane Austen novel, except, like, they do a hard cut to the oldest brother having sex with a chick up against a tree.
Yes. With the poor servant guy having to just, like, look away and be
like,
I hate my job.
Okay, here's what I don't understand. Why do they have to stand there? Are they standing guard? Like, what is the situation?
Well, I think it was, like, literally, because it's by the carriage, so, like, or, like, horse or something. So they were somewhere by the carriage, and then it's, like, pull the car over, driver, we're gonna go bang against a tree. And so
okay, that makes sense. I love how we have, like, you and I have to know the logistics of the situation. Like, how did the steps up against
driver
the tree?
Pull up the partition, please, as yes, Queen Bee would say.
No, like the step-by-step process in which you get to the tree. Okay, so Bridgerton is about the Bridgerton family. It's a family of, what are we at, eight? Three boys, eight. Three older boys. Then you have Daphne, who's the main female lead. Then her, and all the kids are named in alphabetical order. So you have Anthony.
It really does help.
It does, because I got it now. I got it. So it's Anthony. Anthony is the oldest. Then you have Benedict, who is also called not Tommy, because he looks exactly like Colin Donnell. Then you have Colin, who's baby Bridgerton, because he just looks like baby brother Bridgerton. Then you have Daphne. She's the oldest girl. Then Eloise, the badass that she is.
Francesca,
who's barely in it. She gets shipped off to the...
Who, I think... Okay, my theory of why they ship her off is because if they keep going... Because I think they're going to try to film these as, like, soon as possible and stuff. Like, as... basically as quick as they can get greenlit and stuff, and so they'll probably recast with a different actress when she's like old enough to be the lead of like a romance story, because there'll be like sex scenes and stuff,
right?
So it's like, we're not gonna have you see this actress enough for you to like be too attached, because we're gonna recast her with someone old.
Oh, and these are all romance books, so each sibling gets their own romance book, so that's why we're thinking as the series continues. So okay, she gets shipped off to play piano for the summer. Then you have then you have George, and then Hyacinth is the youngest, and they're the baby. Okay, but the story is primarily about Daphne, because this is Daphne's coming out.
This is Daphne's main story, and then you also have, like, kind of the foil to the Bridgertons is the Featheringtons, who, like, have no taste. And so, you know, the Bridgertons are all in these pastels, and are just, like, they have a really sweet family dynamic, and they're just all very nice and just totally great. And then the Featheringtons are just in these like gaudy monstrosities.
They're the Kardashians of the Regency. I heard them described as that. And I was like, yes, they're the, it's like they're rich and they're just kind of like a disaster zone of people.
Because like,
they're a reality show where they have it. But,
truly.
Eloise.
Because actually that is a great parallel, because like Portia Featherington, she's working hard. She is Kris Jenner levels of,
right?
You know, they
she's
say
totally
the devil
Jenner.
Works hard, but Kris Jenner works harder.
Right. They're just searching for their Kim. They don't have a Kim.
They don't.
Okay. So Daphne is the perfect oldest sister, and she's been raised her entire life to basically be ready to get married. This is her one job, is to make an excellent match and pop out some babies. And then you
very
have
nice
Eloise.
Match and like head a household to... yes,
right. So if Daphne
and throw lovely parties and
right, so
have
if Daphne
tea.
Marries well, which she has to marry well, like that will give the
because she's the first, so
she's
it sets
the
precedent.
First, right, all the pressure's on her. So if she gets a good match, that means Eloise and her sisters will also get good matches. But Eloise doesn't want to get married. So we get the feminist perspective through Eloise, because she's like, I want to go to university and I don't want to get married and I don't want to have a bunch of babies. And she and Daphne are very different, and they have a little, like, they all the Bridgerton siblings love each other dearly. They're a very bonded family, but like there's occasional little dust ups. Like there's dust ups between Daphne and Eloise, and there's dust ups particularly between Daphne and Anthony, because Anthony is the pain in the ass older brother. He's supposed to like help Daphne get the deal done. It's like she has this amazing presentation in front of the queen. The queen is like, you're gorgeous. You're the jewel of the season. You're
flawless, my dear.
Flawless. So, I mean, Daphne being called the jewel of the season, she really should have her pick of dudes. It's just Anthony scares off any prospective.
Any of them. Because since he's the age of the suitors, like he thinks like, I'm a man-ho and just the worst, and so pretty much all of my friends are also terrible and not fit to.
Right, like he knows everybody's all these men's dirty business, and he's like, none of them are acceptable. Oh,
and also since their dad, like since their dad died, like he's now like head of household and stuff, and he feels all this pressure that, like, he feels inadequate to like take this over, which. as the mom, who is amazing, points out, yeah, you aren't ready to, like, take all of this over, so just let me handle stuff.
Right, exactly. The mom's like,
you're inept.
Oh, and then it becomes a bigger problem for Daphne because, okay, basically Bridgerton is Gossip Girl in the Regency era. So they have this
business
call.
And instead of Kristen Bell, it's Julie Andrews because...
Julie Andrews, Lady Whistledown, who, like, writes about, you know, the high society and gossip and all their... And she names names. She's kind of like... Crazy Days and Nights, NT, that lawyer dude who does all that shit. She's like the Regency.
But instead of a blind item, he names names.
Oh yeah, she just flat out says this is what's going on. Exactly. There's no blind item. She just says. So she kind of
and like she doesn't charge, so they just like give it out just to like cause a stir.
Right. So she kind of starts in on Daphne that Daphne might not be the diamond of the first water. Like everyone thinks she is because all these suitors are drying up. So now Daphne, instead of being in Lady Whistledown for good reasons, is now in Lady Whistledown for bad reasons. So Daphne is running into a really serious problem in that she has no suitors. Like there's nobody showing
except
up.
Except one who is the first.
He's literally a pedophile. Like I am confident that he's a rapist and a pedophile. They just don't get into it. I just feel like if we dug a little deeper... For sure. So he approaches Daphne at her first party. And it's just one of those icky scenes where you're like, this guy is so disgusting and you just want her. And she's just like, it's like,
get me out of here, please.
Yeah,
please, please.
She's away from Anthony for 5 whole seconds. And you're like, well, see, this is why they didn't leave women alone this time, because you end up with assholes like this. So she's trying to get away from him and she smashes right into the Duke of Hastings. Which, as cute me
Simon
know,
Bassett.
I'm okay with her. She can smash into the Duke Hastings anytime she wants. So, Maddie, what's the backstory on the Duke of Hastings?
Okay, so first off, like, our first introduction to him, like, he rides in on a horse, and you're just, like, immediately, as soon as he's on screen, you're like, hello, sir.
Yes. Yes, I would have his baby. Like, you're just like, you're just like, yeah, I would.
You're just like, I'm in. Okay.
He doesn't even have to say a word. It's just like, Reggie Jean is.
And just walks up to the house to visit Lady Danbury, aka my favorite, that she's the best, and is trying to like get out of going to this party. And she says, he's like, I must offer my regrets. And she said, your regrets have been denied.
And
you're just like,
and he's like, okay.
Best.
So, like, you know.
I guess a brief appearance. Great.
Yeah, Duke's a bad boy, but Lady Danbury can, like.
Is the baddest bee in all the land.
Yeah, she's the baddest bitch in all the world. Nobody crosses her. So, and he, you can very clearly see they have, like, a mother-son, like.
Kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
Okay, so, random aside that, have you watched The Bachelor premiere this week?
I haven't, but he looks just like him.
Because, and he also kind of has daddy issues. And so one of the Bachelor podcasts that I listened to was like, oh yeah, he totally is the Duke. He's the horny Duke that will like jizz in his hand because he hates his dad.
Oh my God. I'm dying. Because it's true.
Because it's true.
Yeah, so the Duke has like major daddy issues,
but because also his dad is like a monster and a terrible person, because like his mom dies in childbirth, and like literally as soon as like Simon pops out, he like grabs him out of the room to like show that like I have a son while she's like dying.
Dad, all he cared about was having the son, and so the Hastings line would continue. And he whored around, he cheated on the mother. The mother was told by the doctors, you need to stop trying to have a baby because it will kill you, but she was determined to give, you know, birth to the heir. And the
give
poor woman, after laboring in hell for however many hours, finally gives birth to Simon. Doesn't even get to hold him before she dies, because that asshole grabs the baby and is like prancing him around like a prize. And then later on, so Simon never knew his mother. His father's a complete asshole. You find out the level of how awful his father is because Simon has a stutter and he's not able to speak very well. And his father basically disowns him and pretends that he's dead. So yeah. Lady Danbury.
So he basically just is cooped up in the like the country castle.
He's hidden and, like, in the never... country house. Yeah, which is a mansion. It's a castle. And so he has no friends. He's got a teacher.
So it's like practically like Beauty and the Beast of like he's alone in this castle with just like servants.
Right. But Lady Danbury was his mother's best friend. To see him. And then, by the time he was like, he's had to be.
He's probably like 10 or something, you know.
Yeah. And she's like, so she finds out, okay, you're not dead. What's going on? And she.
Like, you can read, you can write, you can ride a horse, you can fence. Like, so why aren't you, why like, aren't out you in about, school? Not school?
Right. And so then he starts to stammer and she's like, ah, got it. So
and you just see her heartbreak on her face and then she.
Then oh, but she gives him the best speech. She gives him the best speech, and at the end of it, she tells him, she's like, you can speak, and I'm going to help you conquer this. And then what she says to him, so she's like, you must promise me that when you step into the light, you are worthy of the attention you command. And they cut to grown Simon being every bit the perfect Duke. And the actor has this walk that he does that is so
the Duke. Walk is
like you would expect. This is what I expect a hot Duke to walk like. It's that. And he's got
it's just that he just commands attention and presence.
Yeah. And it's kind of a sexy, I know I'm hot, I know I'm rich. You want this. Kind
you know,
of walk.
I get it. Like sometimes they talk about it like I think this is a like writing trope that's used in fanfic where they compare like walking like a panther, you know, that like it's just as graceful but dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah.
A little bit, like predatory but in a good way. And it's more of a saunter and he's got Lady Danbury on his arm and they're walking into a party and of course everyone's staring at him and you know that he really is a good man.
The mamas.
Yes, the mamas.
Just descend of just like yes.
But there's a twist to the Duke because the Duke does not want to get married.
No, because he's like, I will never continue the Hastings line. It will die with me. I will like be the disgrace that never marries because that's what you wanted for me and I won't do that.
Right. He's totally, so his father, he wrote his father for years trying to get his father's approval. His father would never give his approval. So he hates the man. And so on his father's deathbed, he promises him, since his dad, the only thing he cared about was having the line continue to stick it to his dad. He tells him he'll never marry, he'll never sire a baby, he'll never have children, so the line dies with him. It's a completely great scene because it's such a great fuck you to such an awful character, but like,
and the menace with which he says it and just towers over him and you're just like cheering.
Oh, and then when he's like, speak, you fucking monster, because that's what he would always say to Simon when he was little. You just yell at him, speak. So, and it would terrify Simon, and he couldn't, you know, with the stammer, he couldn't overcome that in his father's presence. So it was just, it's like, it's a really fantastic scene, but you're like, oh, the amount of therapy that this poor man needs. You're like,
you're so messed up.
I don't know if we're going to
love you.
Simon 8 episodes to deal with all of the issues that are going on with this.
This is a lot to unpack.
So the Duke. You got to look up rankings for English titles. The Duke is the highest you can get in titles, except
without being a prince,
royalty than a prince. Okay, so the Duke is the top of the food chain. So Lady Whistledown,
he's the top of the food chain in rank and money, and then he looks like that. So obviously,
he looks like sex on a stick. So you're like, okay, so Lady just Whistledown. So that's
every mother of like. Like, I want my daughter to get with that.
And yeah, so, he's kind of like, think Brad Pitt 1994. Like, being swarmed all the time. Every time he entered a room, he's just swarmed. And he does not want any part of this. He's not going to get married. He just wants to whore around England and be left alone and die in peace after he sticks it to his father. Like, that's his life goal. So Lady Whistledown kind of, like, announces that the Duke has no intention of getting married. But she's like, I'm willing to bet.
Game on, ladies.
Yeah, she's like, game on, bitch. So, yeah. So, both Daphne and the Duke have Lady Whistledown issues. So,
issues.
Anthony gets an in an effort to help his sister, he engages her to the pedophile who she doesn't want to marry. There's
And she's just like, no.
Right.
No. And Anthony's
like, well, he's fine. It looks good on paper. And except you're like, except he's a pedophile. So she's in the garden and there's this, you know, Nigel approaches her and there's like a little bit of an altercation and the Duke.
And it was a moment I literally, I paused the TV because when you pull up on Netflix, there will be like a content warning at the top left corner of the screen when you start an episode.
Right,
and I saw that one of the warnings was sexual violence. And I was like, oh, dang, oh, dang, oh, dang. This is going to go bad. This is going to go bad. This is going to go bad.
Right.
And I paused broad... because it's like, I can't. I was like, I know where this is going. I've seen Outlander. Like,
right.
And.
Like, if you don't.
That's so sad that
if
that's.
You're an Outlander, if you're an Outlander watcher, you go into Bridgerton a damaged person because, like, when.
You do, Outlander because you're like, I see corsets and I think rape is going to happen soon.
Right. Like, when Outlander warns you about a sexually violent scene coming, it's going to traumatize the shit out of you for years to come, speaking as a Outlander viewer.
Former viewer.
This particular scene was not. Because, you know, the Duke's running in to save Daphne and she, like, knocks Nigel's lights out. And
it's such so a great
scene because, like...
Because Duke, also he's turned on because he's, right, like, he's like, that's the hottest thing I've ever seen.
I have ever seen in my life. Exactly. He's like, that is... Hi, nice to meet you. And they kind of had... When they had the run-in, Daphne was introduced to him. Anthony is his
And he thought friend. He was just another desperate social climber. But he's like, oh... You're more interesting than that now.
Well, she kind of like, because she really wasn't like accosting him. She was trying to get away from Nigel and she legitimately just bumps into him by accident. But Simon, just because he's Simon and is like everybody wants
him. And he's just over it because this night has been a disaster.
He's like, yeah, this is just your way you've concocted to try and get my attention. But then, you know, Anthony shows up, introduces Daphne as his sister.
And he's like, oh, you're Anthony's sister.
Anthony's sister.
Got it.
Great. But what's Daphne's reaction to Simon? She's like, oh, you're friends with my brother. You're a super big whore. Got it.
And like, literally
says that to his face in so many words. So I would say
that basically,
the Duke is intrigued.
I'm sure of all the like civilized activities you were up to.
Right, so they call them rakes, and all rake is a great big slut. It's a dude. It's just a slutty guy who whores his way around the country and sleeps with anybody.
I was like, let's bring back that term because it flows off the tongue.
There's so many fictional characters we can apply that to. So the Duke, exactly. And I think it's interesting that the Duke concocts the plan. So he tells Daphne that in order to get her out of this engagement with the pedophile.
Well, Nigel, also, Bray, in underrated moment, because she's talking about, like, he's like, you're seriously not considering still, like, marrying him, and she might be the only option I have, and I can't, like, unlike you, I don't have the luxury to say, I'm not going to marry. And he says, I was surprised to hear that, like, you no longer have a line of suitors, like, around every square in London. And she's like, don't worry. But he's like, no, I'm being serious.
Right. So, like, right from the
get-go. It's this moment where his voice gets softer and, like, he has this moment of, you're amazing. Like,
right.
Of course,
like,
every guy should be after you.
Exactly. You know that the Duke is interested, but he's not going to let himself be interested. Like, he thinks Daphne is the most beautiful thing that's ever existed. So, like, right from the start,
you're just like, oh, you don't know it yet, but you're going to be in love.
You're going to be in love, kids. Well, what's so hilarious to me, I was like, wait, this is a fake dating trope show, and it's enemies to lovers. I'm like, sign me up. So, they concoct.
It's like sponsored by AO3, really.
Right, exactly. So they concoct this plan where the Duke and Daphne are going to pretend that they're courting. So this works out for Daphne because it looks like she's on the precipice of scoring the hottest ticket in town, which is the Duke. And then all the ladies.
So then all the guys will be like,
That makes her more interesting and that will get, you know, Daphne more suitors. And then for the Duke, everyone's going to think he's off the market, so he gets left alone. It's actually fairly brilliant. And I have to say their dance scene when they walk in, that is, like, my favorite cinematography.
When they walk in together, when you talk about the Duke walk, that is the moment of just, like, commanding attention and just that, yeah,
Well, and here's the thing. Daphne is really very...
She's kind of in over her head.
And she's totally in over her head. She's incredible. These women were so sheltered back in the day. And she's incredibly sweet. She's very kind. She really is a wonderful person, but she's very naive and she's very innocent and she's been very protected.
So she's probably like only like 20. Like,
I mean, if even
like 19 or 20. Yeah.
So I read in this in back then. So like the girls would be, they would, you know, have their coming out like when they were in their late teens and the guys would be a little older. So what happens is with the guys is.
Yeah. So I'm thinking.
Well, they go off to university.
Since, like, Violet Bridgerton was cool enough to, like, put off, like, coming out seasons until, like, one is ready and stuff. She's at the oldest 20 years old, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a good... Well, and so then it works a little differently with the guys. So the guys do university, and then they would have, like, a gap year, which basically what that boils down to is they travel around Europe, pretend to look at art, and have a bunch of sex in brothels. And then they come back, and then they're ready for a wife. That's how they handle the high society guys. So all the high society men have basically slipped around. And then when they're ready and old enough to support a wife, then they come back and pick from the virgins, you know, from who's ever out that season. Not kidding. This is actually how it went historically. So, and they actually only stopped the process of girls being presented in front of the queen in England in 1958. So it goes on for a while. So, like, obviously, you know that these two are perfect for each other. They're going to fall madly in love, but there's going to be a lot of problems that ensue. I wanted to ask you, what was your favorite Daphne look in the show? She's got some great dresses.
Yes. I kind of like the ball with the prince when she's like, okay, I'm over the Duke.
With the white and the silver and the hair.
And the glittery, yeah. Mm-hmm. And...
yeah, that one's a really good one. I love that one. Like, I would say, like, that's, like, maybe her best overall look. But the look that I love the most when she's with Simon is episode 2. That pink had, like, glitter. It had, like, jewels all over it. Her hair was perfect. And it's the dance where they're super happy when they're laughing.
Yes.
I love that dance so much. Because they're like, oh, we have to pretend, like, because, like, they act like they don't like each other.
Enjoy ourselves, yeah.
Right. So, like, what's great is the mom, Violet, and Lady Danbury are like, we ship it, and it's going to happen. These two are going to get married. So they concoct all these different ways.
We will make this happen.
Yeah, for these two to get together. So
the Duke is fond of gooseberry pie.
Right. So the Duke shows up.
Oh, that's what my cook makes best.
Right. Perfect. The Duke shows up at Anthony's house for dinner, and who is he seated right next to? Daphne. And of course they have this
and Anthony on the complete other side of the table.
Right. They have this very
don't mess us up for us.
Right. Where the Duke's like, you seem like you're not happy sitting next to me. And Daphne's like, why would I be happy sitting next to you? You're a big slut. And kind of conceited. And he's like, well, you're desperate for a husband. And they both say, well, I'm not interested in you, which is the
Of course, they're
interested. And Anthony is really not okay with the Duke.
Not happy. So then in episode 2, so then shows up at the boxing gym and is like, the frack dude.
Keep your dirty Duke slutty hands off my sister. Like, never gonna happen. And the Duke is like, you're seriously going to marry her to the pedophile? I'm way better than that. I'm a way better option than that guy. Which is great. What's great about the Duke is he outranks Anthony. So he's like, it's cute.
So there's a power dynamic.
Yeah,
of like,
there's a real different power dynamic there. It's like they're best friends.
I'm like, oh, you think you can tell me what to do.
Exactly.
That's cute.
Had the Duke been lower in rank than Anthony, he might have actually backed off. But the Duke is like, basically the only one who can tell me what to do is a king or a prince. And...
and the queen.
I don't even think I'd listen to them if they told me what to do.
She's down for it because the queen's like, yeah, that's a good match. Like,
yeah,
they're
she's
both
like,
gorgeous.
Yeah, the girl she handpicked to be the diamond of the season with the hottest chicken in town, that makes the queen look like the queen got it right. And the queen likes to look like she got it right. So basically Everybody's shipping Daphne and Simon, which is great. What I think is really, what I loved about it was they have this very intelligent humorous banter with each other, where
yes, because as they're on the promenade and like negotiating like how many balls and stuff, and it's like this back and forth, and you know, the ping pong match like kind of wit,
like, you know, the moment right met his intelligence match, you know what
and
I mean?
And that he's just having fun, like, yes, just talking to her, he's enjoying himself.
And keep in mind, this is a man who literally could not speak. So he's not a big chatter. Like, he doesn't like to chat. He doesn't like to talk. So the fact that he's able to converse with her so easily, that's, you know, he's Darcy in that way, in that he's not really shy, but he's not a social butterfly.
He's aloof.
He's a loner. Yeah, he's aloof and he's a loner. So, like, actually having...
But he also has mad game, because on that walk...
Oh my God.
Like, and you need to send me flowers, because if you're courting, you would totally send me flowers. Expensive ones. And he's like... If I was actually courting you, I wouldn't need to send flowers. I would just need 5 minutes alone in the drawing room. And you're like, sir.
Like, you're like the look he gives Daphne, you're like, sweetheart, I would understand right now if you ripped the dress off and you guys just went at it right just now. Like, nobody would judge you. We all understand. Get it, girl. So she's like, but like, she's, this is where Daphne gets very... This is uncertain ground, because Daphne has no sex education at all. She doesn't know anything, people. Like, next, I don't even know, like, she knows that, like, it's hilarious because, you know, Eloise and one of the Featherington.
Penelope,
they're best friends. So Penelope finds out that one of the Featheringtons, their cousin, is pregnant.
Their cousin is pregnant.
And she's not married. So she's talking about it with Eloise. She covers. She doesn't tell her it's her cousin. She says it's one of the maids. And it's the most, like, it tells you how much these girls don't know. Because Eloise's like, well, how is she pregnant if she's not married? And Eloise is like, or Penelope's like, I don't know. And she's like,
I don't know.
Right. So Eloise walks in to the Bridgerton lunch and is like,
how does a woman become with Wilde?
Yeah. And she's like, apparently.
It's like,
yeah. And Daphne's like, oh, I want to know that too. And Eloise is like, apparently marriage is not even a requirement. So yeah. So when the Duke.
And like, the mom just shoots a look like, boys do not even think about it.
Right. So when the Duke like drops his little sexual innuendo on Daphne, she's like really like,
wait, what is this feeling? Okay.
Okay, so they go to this dance, and it's one of my favorite dances, because they're like, they're totally teasing each other about this ruse, and they're like, okay, we're gonna have to pretend like we actually enjoy each other. And the Duke's like, that's gonna be really tough. And like, they clearly love being around each other, and they have this really fun dance,
and they're just having fun.
Yeah, where like Daphne's just laughing, and the minute Daphne starts laughing, the Duke just gets this huge smile on his face. And this is not a guy who
just
smiles
hard eyes
a lot, right? And like, so yeah, then they have like a little.
And so conversely, because he's starting to like soften towards her, he's also super protective, because then when Burbook shows up, he's like, he can't even handle it.
Oh,
he's
no.
Just like,
he's like, yeah. So like, now that he's
no chill.
Like, it does not. And I would say if you're going to pick who falls for who first, the Duke has fallen for Daphne first. He's just not.
And hard.
Yeah, he's like not dealing with it in any way, shape, or form. So it comes out in very interesting ways, and one of those ways is he's very aggressive with Burbrook and getting Burbrook, because he really doesn't think like, okay, I'm not gonna marry her, I'm not gonna date her, but he's not wild about it. He's kind of like, okay, we're gonna find her a husband, but he's like, he's starting to be a
it's
little bit
sure
like,
as hell isn't gonna be you.
Yeah, he's starting to be a little bit like Anthony, where he's like, oh no, that guy's not good enough. And clearly, Burbrook is awful, and Anthony doesn't know that Burbrook assaulted Daphne, so he kind of, like, he tells
He's Anthony, just trying to be male ego of, like, what I says goes, and
right.
At first, Simon's being subtle, because he's, like,
well,
Burbrook is listing, like, all these traits of Daphne, and he's, like, her right hook.
Right. Oh, my God, that scene is hilarious, because he just drops all these lines. Well, what I love about it is, like, you know, he tells Anthony what happens. Anthony cancels the whole marriage deal. Fine, it looks like Burbrook is taken care of. But like, you're still
okay.
You're not satisfied.
Before that, of just the line of like, because when Burbrook's trying to be like, I was careless with the cabinet door. And then he says, he was careless with his honor. And you're just like, oh boy.
Oh,
snap.
But
okay.
Like, Berwick is so awful. He's so awful. And like that scene when the scene where he follows the Duke out of the party and he's just like whining, basically, just let me have this horse. He basically calls Daphne a horse. He needs Daphne because she will elevate his rank. And since the Duke is the top of the food chain, he's like, you don't need her like I do. And then he's like, well, why haven't you proposed yet? And then he says, well, probably because you already slept with her. And you're like, what did you just say? So the Duke turns around and gets in his face. And he's like, shut the fuck up about my woman. And they kind
go
of
go home then, before like, I, anytime, like.
Right. Anytime you mention the Duke's father and mother. Like, so he does. And the Duke just beats the ever-living shit out of him. I actually thought he was going to kill him. And I was not going to be sad if he killed him.
I wasn't going to mourn it. No, no.
But it was so satisfying because you know that's what the Duke wanted to do at the party. Like, he restrained himself. Like, he wanted to beat the shit out of him the second he saw that he was, like, even looking in Daphne's direction. And it's just really hot.
Like, this is why I take boxing lessons, so I can kick your ass.
Basically. Like, also, there's just a lot of shirtless boxing in this show, and it's just the better for it. It's just fantastic. What I wanted
because
to ask
he also
you
has
about,
a diggle like best friend, and it's great.
Right, he's got the diggle. Okay, what I wanted to ask your opinion about, because I have been, as we have both watched this show 75 million times. Okay, so he says, let's, so it's after he says, call me Simon. So they're having, so after the whole Burbrook marriage gets disallowed and it's done, and he's, Burbrook's gone. Don't have to worry about how it happens, it just happens. Okay, so they're at another party and they're dancing. And Daphne's like, I'm taking control of my life. We cannot get this wrong because it's my life and I need to get a good match. And Simon.
Because I want like a happy home and a husband.
A happy home
kids.
And laughter and everything I grew up with. Because the Bridgerton, her parents were a love match and they had a beautiful marriage. And so all Daphne wants is to fall in love with someone just like her mom did and raise a family with him. And what I love about that is they present Daphne. Daphne wants the marriage and the babies and Eloise doesn't. And you know what, guys? Neither women
they're
are
both
treated
okay.
Like they're wrong. Both choices are treated as valid in the show. So let that be a lesson
Bless.
To you. Which is rare that you get that. It's rare where both
it's so true.
Are valued and it's okay. No matter which road you want to go down, it's okay. All right. So, Simon... He's dancing with Daphne, and he slides his hand up a little bit because he's dancing very close. So clearly you know he's attracted to Daphne. And he slides his hand up, so he's off the dress, and he just lets his hand graze.
Like her shoulder blade, basically.
Like, yeah, the bare skin on her back, which is scandalous. Like, they're not supposed to be skin-on-skin touching of any kind at any point.
Any kind.
So this is Simon kind of
keep
like...
Keep room for Jesus. Like.
Right. He's like making a move. But he tells her as he's doing this in his sexy voice, you must call me Simon. Because he's like, if we're really courting, we should be on a first name basis. So like he's super flirty with her. He's like, you're like, dude, we know you're gone. Like, just admit that you're gone. So she's kind of
which
like,
is basically what Lady Danbury says like immediately after
right.
this.
Okay. So I want to get to that point, but... I love Daphne's reaction because this is the first guy who's ever touched her skin in any way that is not either her father or brother, right? And so, like, this is Daphne's sexual awakening, and she's, like, totally, like, he takes her breath away. She's, like, totally, like, oh, I'm starting to have warm, fuzzy bunny feelings for you, and I don't know what to do with them. So, okay, they agree, they separate. This is the part I want to talk to you about. Simon stands by Lady Danbury, and he watches Daphne dance with all these dudes, and he's like, yeah, this is all about finding Daphne a husband. And Lady Danbury says to him, "What? Why are you so solemn? What is wrong?" And he stutters, and he says nothing. Why do you think he stutters?
Because he's, like, overcome with emotion and, like, freaking out, basically.
Okay, that's what I thought, too. I was like, is it, like, the feels? Because then you flash back to, that's when they tell you that he's made this vow. To me, the stammer is like, oh, shit, I feel all the feels.
He's vulnerable. Stuff. Exactly.
Right. So I think when he stutters is when he's feeling vulnerable. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was analyzing that scene correctly, because I was like, the stutter, it's
No, because you just get the slightest stammer, and I didn't catch it on first watch. I think it was on, like, the second or third, like, he stammered, and it's precious. Stammered.
Yes, it's like, by your third viewing, you can really hear it, and you're like, holy shit. So he's clearly unnerved. He's as, you know, she's, Lady Danbury's reading him correctly, like, there's something off. He's not feeling like himself, because he feels all the feels, and he doesn't know what to do with all the feels. And he's made this vow to his father, but then, you know, there's this really hot girl that he likes to laugh with right in front of him, dancing with a bunch of other dudes. So what I love is how quickly the show goes. Like, I was kind of expecting it to, like, I know it was only 8 episodes, but I was like, oh, we really went from 0 to 60. And like, because I was by episode 3, we're starting to have the dreams. Daphne, then by episode 3, I think, like,
yeah, I was expecting a kiss at episode 8, essentially.
Right. I was like, holy shit, we're plowing through story. So I would say the first 2 episodes, it's very clear that the Duke is at very least attracted to Daphne, if not already.
There's infatuation.
Infatuation. By the beginning of, after the Duke touches her back, Daphne's like, I want me some more of that. So after that, it's, and they would, I think they do focus on it more.
So like then, like, next episode, she's having sexy dreams, but basically because she has no knowledge of sex, the extent of the sexy dream is that he takes off her glove, right, and, like, almost kisses
her. And then he twirls her on the dance floor, and then they almost kiss. Like, it's the chasest sex dream you're ever going to see.
It's the chasest wet dream ever. Like,
yes, this would be what someone who does not have any knowledge of sex or anything regarding sex would have a dream about.
Yeah, so, like, these are like my 16-year-old Joe Jonas dreams, right, basically.
Oh my god, girl, I'm watching The Kingdom right now, and I'm seeing baby Nick Jonas have a lot of sex, and it's making me uncomfortable because I'm old enough to be his mother, so it's a problem. I'm like, I need baby Nick Jonas to stop having all the sex.
Not quite, like, so he's a year older than me, so not quite sure, like,
oh, and I was talking with Jen because I started watching Julie and the Phantoms. And so she was explaining to me all the different ways it's okay if you have the hots for whatever the hot one is. I don't
Charlie know. Gillespie, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. She's like, it's okay because in real life he's completely legal. But I've got it, like, at least 15 years on you guys. So I was like, wait, how old were they when they died? Because that was 1995, so I was 14. So she said that he was 16 when he died in the show. So
they were 7.
Technically, he's older than me. So it's okay if I find him attractive.
There we go. Because I think, yeah, they were 17 when they died. Yeah.
Right. So he's 3 years older than me. So if he had lived, he would be, I don't remember how old I am, 42, because I'm 39. There, I masked it. See, so it's completely fine for me to look at what is potentially a 16-year-old and think he's hot. Right?
Yes, and the actor's legal, so it's also good.
Cool. All right, moving on. Back to Bridgerton.
So it's the chase of sexy dream ever.
The sex dream. Okay.
And she can't sleep, and the best scene, so then she, like, walks down to the kitchen, and Anthony is like, what are you up to? And she's like, I was gonna get a glass of warm milk. And then they look at the stove, and because they're, like, rich people, they don't know how to operate it.
Even one of them know how, like, to heat up anything on the stove, which is hilarious.
And she's like, well, you light. I suppose we should light it. And he's like, yes, good idea. Well, how about you do it?
I should not know how to do it. By the way, you can tell somebody's
watching cold milk, then, if
they start slipping into a British accent all of a sudden.
Okay, so I had a period where, from about pretty much in my freshman year in high school, when I was very deep in my Pirates of the Caribbean phase, along with 2005's Pride and Prejudice, I was obsessed with Keira Knightley. And so,
same.
And I watched those on DVD, basically on constant loop. So in that age bracket, if I got very excited about something, if I was talking very fast, I would start talking like Keira Knightley.
Got it.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. Okay.
It was a thing. So, like, this fully comes back.
This comes
when
back.
I get in Bridgerton mode.
It's okay. Own it. Own it.
Because Phoebe Divner, I think is her last name. Yes. She kind of has a she has a Kira-esque accent too.
She looks a little bit like her too, where she's got kind of porcelain. She's just very like, I don't know how to, dainty. Like a little bird.
I know, because it's funny, because if you like, at the early days before there was really fan content for Bridgerton, if you looked up Bridgerton on YouTube and stuff, there were like fan castings and like old Tumblr posts from back when people were trying to cast off the novels, and like Keira Knightley was a very popular one for who they wanted for Daphne. I saw Henry Cavill's as the Duke. And
I gotta say though, like,
this is perfect.
I think they just, like, to me, who casting Reggie to me was Sean. Sorry, I killed McDreamy. So now me and her can be friends again. I really didn't want to like this show because I have a lot of issues with Shonda. But I don't know. I have, like, I saw on, like, some message boards.
She's executive producing. And so
she didn't write it. But I saw on some message boards, like, it's seriously disgusting the amount of racists that are out there and how they think it's perfectly okay to say that, oh, this, the fact that they cast a black man is completely unbelievable and that, you know, it totally took me out of, like, seriously, if you cannot, like, get, like, understand that Reggie is perfect for this role and you have a problem with his skin color given the like, you need to, like, work on yourself because you are deeply disturbed. So I just thought he was
exactly
fantastic. Like, they could not
he's the literal best casting. Like, it's a revelation.
Yeah, like, you, like, he is, to me, like, I kind of feel like you could have, like, Daphne be played by a couple different people, but he is the Duke.
But like, this,
I can't you, even
he imagine. He is the Duke, yeah.
Yeah, anyone else in this role, he's perfect. Well, and I love, too, that they address the racial aspect of the show and the fact that they have lots of different people of lots of different colors playing characters, and it's because the king, the white king, married a black woman. So that elevated all the African-Americans, or not African-Americans because they were British. That elevated all the black
people. All the black people,
yeah. Society, which makes total sense. And when you think about it, God, what if that had actually happened? Would that would have had to make a difference. You know what I mean? Like, if a king sanctions a marriage and says, no, this is fine. Like, that.
Well, it's, yeah, that's how society had worked in, like, those kind of days. If you think about, like,
but I just basically think about that and how easy
Henry VIII okaying Protestantism basically is, like, how like the Reformation got solved.
Right. He was cool, like, with divorce. We made divorce a thing. Like, it just, it's such a simple solution. It just makes your heart ache for it to be true. You know what I mean? It would have been like,
yeah.
Oh God, why couldn't that have happened? You know what I mean? And just all the pain and misery that could have been was just one person in a position of power. You know what I mean? Just could change the face of society, which I'm just like, it's such a brilliant idea for the show. And it leads to a really amazing talk between Lady Danbury and Simon about the power of love. And Lady Danbury has, like, this very, like, you know, love conquers all, love changed the way that we live in our society and how people view us. Whereas Simon's a little bit more, listen, yeah, it's great that the king fell in love with a black woman, but he can easily change his mind. And then we're back in chains. You know what I mean? So I think Simon has a little bit more of a Simon doesn't
love really, can be taken away. Like,
right, exactly. That's a beautiful way of phrasing it. Love can be taken away, because that's all Simon knows. You know, he has Lady Danbury, but Lady Danbury was not, I don't think she was there day to day. I think she was a source of support, but she didn't move into the house with him. You know what I mean? She made sure he had the right tutors and she helped them, and, you know, she would come on visits and that kind of stuff.
No, because it was like basically like a mother figure, but more of like kind of like how you would see an aunt.
Yes, that's it.
So it's not your mother that you see every day, but it's like,
right. And I don't think she ever tried to like take his mother's place, but she was like the favorite aunt who would come to visit. And but he still spent a lot of his time alone, and the one person he was looking for approval from, his only living birth parent, he was not getting. Like, there was nothing he could ever do that was good enough for his father until he showed up and was just, once Simon was who he is now.
So at least getting dad, some, like, validation from her is basically what the shred of, like, keeping him not being a mess.
Right. Like, he's only the Simon he is today because he had Lady Danbury. Like, that's the only reason why he survived his father, because he had Lady Danbury. But just because he had Lady Danbury doesn't mean that that undoes all the damage his father did, is basically the struggle for Simon. So, oh my gosh, we should probably like have like 8 episodes on this show, because it's like, it's a lot.
Okay, this might be, okay, so we'll record again, and we'll probably do, let's do a Bridgerton part 2.
Yeah, we'll do Bridgerton. So we pretty much have gotten up to episode 3, right? We're at 3.
Well, the start of 3, because there's the conversation in the park in 3 that we need to get to, okay, but we don't have time. So all right, so we'll that is where we will...
We'll do a little bit. We'll do, I think we got 109.
And 110. So
Vampire Diaries, and then we'll do 3 and 4.
Yes, and since 110, there are sexy times. You're very sexy.
That will flow nicely, won't it? I'm so proud of us. Okay, so next week we'll record, and we're gonna try and
see this might be our next recording session would be Ben's favorite episode, because we're gonna talk about Stellana sex and
oh my god sex. I'm so excited, like, you guys don't know, this to me, the next week's episode of the Vampire Diaries is pinnacle. It's peak Stellana, peak, which peak. Is a little sad that it hits in the 10th episode. No, they have great moments. They have great moments for the rest of the show.
No, it's a thing of, like, you should have known of, like, you never want your couple to get together on episode 10.
No, like, it's not good. Like,
unless it's a 10-episode season.
I can 12 hours of it. It's such a hard thing as a Stellana fan, because you want them together. You know that down the road, Damon is going to happen. Like, if you don't understand, Damon is going to be Elena's boyfriend at some point. I can't help you. There's nothing I can do to save
you. You're watching the wrong show.
Right, you're watching the wrong show. It's just that, you know, like, it's like they're setting up Stefan and Elena as, like, the anchor so seriously in season 1 and season 2. It's very hard. It just makes it very hard to take later seasons. That's all I'm going to say for right now.
And so the last thing I will say to kind of wrap things up is that's why I love Bridgerton format. It's going to be great where if each season is just one romance, like, their romance ends with the happily ever after, I'm okay with, like,
just leave them alone. With
Simon and Daphne, they just pop up in random moments to, like, with, offer, like, sibling, like, advice and have pregnant. Cute kids, right. And wear pretty dresses,
right, and just leave them alone. I am not interested in Daphne and Simon's story continuing in a major way. Just leave them alone, don't touch. Well, you know what? It's a good gig for the actors, too, because if you're rotating who's, like, the star, like, that opens up, like, they can sign up for Bridgerton, but they can do other projects, too. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So they can do other things and then just show up for a couple episodes where
they're on a top-rated Netflix show
or something.
And I kind of feel like Netflix has been looking for another hit. Like, they kind of need something.
They need one.
Yeah. Because they're kind of getting their asses handed to them with Hulu and Prime lately. So they kind of needed a big sweeping, everyone's talking about it, show. So
they needed a water cooler.
They need a water cooler. And this show, my friends, is a water cooler show. Which we will discuss more, all the sexy times, next week. Or whenever we do it.
Because pretty much the remaining, we kind of went through all the setup to said sexy times, but then it's pretty much next episode is.
Like, you have to do all the setup, because then when you're talking about the episodes, then, like, it makes sense. If we just start talking about the episodes, it won't make sense to anyone. So there's a lot of setup.
So there we go. So Bridgerton part 2 is going to happen.
Bridgerton part 2. Okay. Sounds good. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you again for listening to Mystic Falls Memories. Make sure to subscribe and drop those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, as they really help us out with our visibility. And don't forget to follow us over on Twitter on @MFMemoriesPod for updates on future episodes. Thanks again, and bye!